Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Trojans Wire, part of the College Wire Network at USA Today, this is the Trojans Wired Podcast. Here are your hosts, Matt Zemek and Ian Hest.
Welcome to the latest episode of Trojans Wired, the podcast, which is an in-house production of the website Trojans Wire. We're part of the College Wire Network. You might have been wondering about my co-host and producer, Ian Hest. Let's just say he needed a hiatus, needed time away. Don't need to say anything more than that. We welcome back Ian to our show. Ian, so awesome to have you back. And just in time to preview the last ever, maybe, Pac-12 women's basketball tournament, a galaxy of stars in Las Vegas. You know, the Pac-12, it has the best top six of any conference in the country. And if you are living in another part of the United States listening to this podcast, that is not embellishment or hyperbole. Find another conference with six teams that are all going to be projected top six seeds in the NCAA tournament. The Pac-12 might have five teams that are projected top four seeds. And that means five teams that are going to be hosting first round NCAA tournament games. So the Pac-12 has a really good chance of getting five teams into the Sweet 16. No other conference can compete with that. And so, Ian, we're here to, in this show, we're going to talk about USC basketball in a separate episode this week. But this is our Pac-12 women's tournament bracket breakdown and preview. And so, Ian, as I welcome you back to the show, before we get to specific bracket picks, just your overall thoughts on the Pac-12 women's basketball season that we've had. Surprises, disappointments, standouts. Obviously, Juju Watkins, you're going to talk about her a little bit. But just things that have caught your eye over the past few months as we now turn to the last Pac-12 women's basketball tournament in Vegas.
I have to wait to talk about Juju Watkins. I mean, like, I mean, every expectation that she could have had, she has exceeded, right? So I'm gonna put a button on that because I want to talk about it later, and I think in a different episode that we might have. But it's a little bit sad to me that this is going to be the last Pac-12 tournament in terms of women's basketball that we will ever have, because this conference has been the premier college basketball, I would say men's or women's college basketball conference that we have seen in quite some time. I mean, you and I are both very big aficionados of college basketball, and it has been quite the joy to watch this Pac-12 conference season and to have the tournament that we're about to have and to crown a champion for it. I don't know if any of these six teams will wind up being the ultimate national champion, and that's another conversation, but I really have enjoyed getting to see just traditional West Coast basketball that has not really been on display with this much fervor in quite a long time. And it's been very enjoyable to watch over the past couple of months, to see USC, to see Stanford, to see UCLA, to see Oregon State. I mean, these are just quality, very good, like old school style basketball teams that are fun to, if you're a fan of basketball, this has been just a really fun couple of months to absorb in the swan song of what will be the final Pac-12 tournament.
Couldn't agree more, Ian. I am going to really miss seeing, for instance, Lindsey Gottlieb go up against Tara Vanderveer. And of course they locked horns when Gottlieb was at Cal and led Cal to the 2013 Final Four. And of course, the Los Angeles schools going up against Stanford and those battles. And then of course you've seen Colorado and Utah emerge as new powers in recent years. I mean, Utah was a two seed last year. Colorado got to the Sweet 16 and has been a factor this year. Boy, just every week there's been at least one great game in Pac-12 women's basketball. You might have recalled, we never got to talk about it on our podcast, but that UCLA Oregon State game, four lead changes in the final 15 seconds,
That was
and just
unbelievable. Yeah.
unbelievable, and just players just making these incredible shots under pressure. And neither UCLA nor Oregon State was the champion of the league, and yet that was as good a game as you're probably going to see all year. The other really great game involved your Florida Atlantic Gals against Arizona. I mean, those might be the two best basketball games of the whole college basketball season. So one of them came from Pac-12 women's hoops. And before we get into the bracket, just the other really amazing thing about this season is that Stanford won the league. And people are going to say, well, of course Stanford won the league. Tara's been there for 35 years in Palo Alto, and Stanford's been the heavy, the blue blood, the queen, royalty, whatever you want to say. But Stanford wasn't supposed to be that good this year. Stanford loses Lauren Betts, and we can see how great a player she is. Stanford doesn't just lose Lauren Betts in the transfer portal, loses her to UCLA. And UCLA looked like the heavyweight at the very start of January, beat USC back on December 30th. UCLA and South Carolina were like 1-2 in the nation at the very start of the calendar year 2024. And then this conference just pushed around UCLA. USC went through a tough time for a little bit. Every team went through a tough time for a while, except Stanford. And Tara got her Cardinal to once again win the league. They were not picked to win the league before the season. It was supposed to be UCLA. It was supposed to be Colorado. And Colorado was atop the league at the end of January and then lost four straight. And certainly Colorado struggled a bit, but it's also a testament to the quality and the depth of this conference that a team as good as Colorado could lose four straight games. Colorado was not losing to chumps. And the Oregon State swept Colorado, and because Oregon State just defended the hell out of the Buffs. So many stories like that where things that we might view as quote unquote normal or ordinary most years, where it was very normal this year. I mean, in a great way, that there was just nothing you could take for granted in this conference. From one night to the next, teams pushing each other every week, every night. It was just a magnificent display of basketball.
And I'll just point out too that I mean you didn't mention it, so I will. One of my favorite games of the year was when USC beat Stanford in Palo Alto, right? So there has been a constant of the I guess shuffling of the deck, if you will, that this conference has experienced this year, but not just this. Not just this conference, which is what I'm very excited about for the upcoming NCAA women's, tournament, March Madness that we're looking forward to. Because for a very long time, we have said that, oh, well, March Madness for the men are fun because anything can happen. And for the women, we've sort of scoffed and said that, oh, it's mostly chalk. So you don't have to really care that much. That's not the case anymore. There is a
Nope.
lot of really great parity that I think that we've been exposed to and some really great poaching. I don't know if people have noticed that, but in the women's game, the level of coaching that has gone on has really elevated in the past 5 to 10 years. That has really made it a fun sport to watch, that I think has gone very unnoticed, because there is a lot of development that has happened with some of these teams, that where they may appear in October or November. A Colorado, we didn't necessarily see coming, and now we can really project that like we do in the men's game, which I think is very fun and makes it very interesting to watch, because it is really good traditional basketball. And I mean, watching USC go through their ups and downs, and I know we're going to do another episode about that, but to see the jockeying that has happened in the Pac-12 this final season has been truly special. And I hope people that really love the sport of basketball have enjoyed it and are able to watch it.
Oh, that last point, are able to watch it. You know, that's the only thing that makes me happy that the Pac-12 is dying, and that is that, you know, people have not been able to see Juju Watkins to the same extent that they've been able to see Caitlin Clark. Why? Because Big Ten Network is widely available and Pac-12 Network is not. I am so excited to, you know, to realize that next year, next season, you know, we're gonna get Big Ten Network USC basketball games, and so many more people are going to be able to watch USC hoops as this program hits its stride
Matt, can I cut you off on
under
that?
Lindsey Gottlieb. Go
She
ahead.
going to become a star. She's going to become a national star simply because of the availability that
Yes.
she's about to have. And she is that good. I don't know if she's going to break the scoring record, because she's a bit more of a distributor than you know, the volume scorer that Caitlin Clark is. But she's, I mean, you and I watch her on a nightly basis. She's LeBron. She really is. And so this is going to be really exciting to watch.
It certainly will be. And I mean, with Caitlin Clark making the announcement that she is heading to the WNBA, Juju Watkins is right there to take the torch from Caitlin Clark as the preeminent superstar figure in women's college basketball. She plays for USC. That is very exciting. All right. So we did want to air out just some overview thoughts on the past couple months of Pac-12 women's basketball, especially Ian, because you haven't had the opportunity to talk about those kinds of things. Wanted to give you a chance to do that. But now let's break down a bracket. It's bracket season, baby. The 2024 Pac-12 Women's Basketball Tournament in Las Vegas. It should be absolutely thrilling. You know, with six, you know, six teams that can reasonably expect to win the tournament. Let's remember Washington State won the tournament as a 7 seed last year. So I'm actually might be selling some team short. Like maybe Arizona or Washington will get on a run. USC fans hope that's not the case because the winner of that first round game plays the Trojans in the quarterfinals. But you get the point. This is a deep tournament. Like the idea that it's going to be chalk. Hey, it could happen, and USC fans wouldn't mind that if it's USC versus Stanford on Championship Sunday. But as you've said, Ian, parity is now a much more prevalent in women's college hoops than it used to be. And like it used to be that, you know, UConn would just be would have walk to a coronation. And, you know, that doesn't happen anymore. A lot of people thought last year was going to be a South Carolina coronation, but that did not happen. So yeah, it's a new and exciting time in women's basketball, precisely because the unpredictability of the men's game is has now come to the women, with a lot of quality basketball on offer. So should be a great show in Las Vegas. And now let's get to the bracket. We're going to take each game in the order that it will be played. So everything starts on Wednesday, March 6th. And so you have four first round games on Wednesday the 6th, and it starts at noon Pacific time. All times we're going to list are Pacific time, since that's where it's going to be in Vegas, and this is a West Coast audience. It starts at noon with number 12 seed Oregon against number 5 seed Colorado. And I guess the talking point for this game, Ian, is simply that, you know, 5 years ago, Oregon was the heavyweight in the Pac-12 with Sabrina Ionescu, made a Final Four. If the 2020 women's NCAA tournament had not been wiped out by the pandemic, Oregon was the favorite to win that. And yet here we are a few years later, and Oregon is the last place team in the Pac-12. It's really one of the more shocking stories we've seen in women's basketball over the past 4 years.
I agree with you, it is unfortunate. But I, as all things with college sports, I think when we talk football, when we talk baseball, when we talk basketball, college sports is very cyclical. And so, you know, Oregon might be down right now, but I don't know if necessarily in a couple of years they will be experiencing the same regard that they are in right now. One of the more exciting things has been to see the rise of some of the other Pac-12 teams. And so I'm not too concerned about Oregon's move to the Big Ten. I know that there is a lot of concern about that because women's basketball in the Big Ten is arguably, you know, the SEC of football. So I don't know if they'll be able to make the move so well, but they've had a tough year. I think that they'll be able to survive this, but they're not going to advance.
Yeah, I will take Colorado as well. We'll talk more about the Buffs as we go into the next round of the bracket. All right, the next first round game on Wednesday. Now this is an intriguing one. This is number 9 seed Washington State, the defending conference tournament champion. You know, not the regular season champion, but Wazoo won the conference tournament last year. Number 9 seed Washington State against number 8 seed Cal. And the line here, Ian, the storyline here, is that if Washington State beats Cal, the Cougars are probably going to be on the good side of the bubble.
Right.
You know, don't want to guarantee anything, but if they can beat Cal, I would set the odds as better than 50-50 that they get in. And I think if they lose to Cal, they're probably out. Other bubble teams are going to pass them. Your evaluation.
Yeah, no, you're 100% correct. I think that Wazoo has probably been the biggest disappointment of the Pac-12 this season because I expected a lot more of them. They were a very good team last year. And, you know, you and I had gone back and forth about them when we were going through their run to a Pac-12 title. And I was a bit shocked that they had not had the same sort of tenacity that you would have expected for a returning champion. You were very high on them last year, and it had come as a bit of a surprise to me to see what they had, you know, been able to accomplish. But I think that this is a must win. I think you're correct in that. If they fall in this, I think they're on the wrong side of the bubble. I don't necessarily know if one win gets them in, and we'll talk about this, but I think they may need two and a big upset in order for them to be on the right side of the bubble.
I would only say that injuries might have played more of a role with Washington State than a few other teams in the country. But even then, like when you raise the bar the way Washington State did last year and you don't follow it up, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a talking point. But I will take Washington State over Cal in the 8-9 game, or I should say the 9-8 game. Wazoo's the 9.
I agree with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so now on to the game that USC fans really need to pay attention to on Wednesday. And that is the night session, the first of the two first-round games on Wednesday night. Number 7 seed Arizona against number 10 seed Washington. Winner plays USC in the quarterfinals on Thursday. And this is my favorite kind of event of championship week game. Double rubble, bubble trouble, as I like to call it. Two bubble teams. Both right on the edge, and the loser is absolutely out. Zero question. The loser will not make the NCAA tournament, and I don't think the winner is in. I think the winner will then have to beat USC on Thursday to get in. So either way, USC is going to play a highly motivated team in the quarterfinals, and that's going to make that game a little thorny for the Trojans. But first, Arizona versus Washington. Arizona, a lot of injuries there, along with Washington State. But Adia Barnes coaches defense extremely well. She's one of the elite defensive coaches in the country. It's why Arizona made the national championship game 3 years ago. And Washington can also D up. I mean, we saw Washington hound Juju Watkins into an 8 of 27 shooting performance. USC couldn't beat the Huskies at the Galen Center. If USC had beaten Washington at the Galen Center, Trojans might be in the catbird seat for a number one seed. As it is, they're a projected number two seed. But the point is, Washington can play. And yet you look at Washington 6-12 in the Pac-12 this season. Washington let a lot of very close games slip through its fingers. And Ian, you mentioned Wazoo is a disappointment. To me, if it's not Oregon, the other really disappointing team has been Washington. That there's so much more material there than a 6-12 Pac-12 record. You know, one of Washington's losses, Ian, was an overtime game to Arizona State. You can't be losing to the 11th place team in your conference. And Washington led that game by 4 in the final minute. Again, just lost that kind of game a few times this season. And that's why Washington is on the bad side of the bubble right now. I like Arizona in this game. I think that just the way Arizona has played recently, remember, Arizona won at Stanford. So USC and Arizona, the only two teams to win on Stanford's home floor in Pac-12 play. I think Arizona is catching fire at the right time, very nearly beat USC last Thursday. So I'm going to take Arizona over Washington.
I'm going to disagree with you and say that Washington will take this. But I do think that if you are a USC fan who's probably watching this, they're listening to this podcast, like you would prefer Arizona, I think, because Arizona, like, you know what you're going to get with them. With Washington, you don't necessarily. And when they're on, they are much better than what their record indicates. So, I mean, like you had mentioned in the buildup to this, that they beat USC in the Galen Center. So I don't think if I'm USC, I don't think I want to see Washington. I think I would prefer Arizona, but I think you're going to get Washington because I think Washington has the capability of being very streaky and being able to prove things in very short stints that will wind up being productive in a tournament like this.
We will definitely talk more about that matchup when we get to the quarterfinals, but I will say I agree with you. I would much rather face Arizona if I'm USC than Washington. Totally agree with you there. All right, the last game on Wednesday, the last of the four first round games, is probably the game that looks at the most Oregon Colorado as well. It looks like a very straightforward game. Arizona State at Utah. Arizona State near the bottom of the conference, and I know that Utah has been struggling of late. But Utah did still beat USC in the Galen Center, so I don't see any trouble for the Utes here.
Oh, I completely agree with you. I think that Utah rolls.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that this is probably the easiest one to call.
That's right. We'll talk about the Utes in just a few minutes as we now move into Thursday's quarterfinals. So we both have Colorado beating Oregon, so that would put Colorado, the 5 seed, against 4th seed Oregon State. And so, Ian, the obvious storyline here, assuming we get a Colorado Oregon State quarterfinal, the Beavers just absolutely owned the Buffs this season, swept them, controlled both games in Corvallis and in Boulder. That game in Boulder had like a 6 or 7 point final margin, but Oregon State led by over 20 in that game, just absolutely shut down the Buffs offense. Oregon State has one of the top 10 field goal percentage defenses in the country. So, Ian, we have the scenario that's so interesting at tournament time. A good team is on the verge of getting swept 3 games by the same problematic, troublesome opponent in a bad matchup. Does Colorado avoid the 3-game sweep, or do the Beavers bring out the brooms in Vegas?
Yeah, Tamia Gardner's really been one of the most impressive, I think, in all of college basketball, players of this season. She's really come on to the scene. And I think that I don't know if she's gonna stay, but if she winds up transferring, I mean, that's a very interesting transfer portal thing to watch and keep an eye out for. I like Oregon State. I don't love Oregon State. So if you want, if I have to make a prediction, I'm gonna go with the more talented team, and the more talented team is Colorado. So I need to sort of stick to my guns on that and pick the Buffs to get it done.
There is an injury question. Oregon State's elite post player Reagan Beers has been injured. She's missed a number of games recently. Now, Oregon State still played Stanford closely, however, last week. So it's not as though the Beavers' level of play has significantly dropped. I mean, they can really use her. Like, they didn't have her against USC. That's part of why USC was able to win in Corvallis a few weeks ago. So that could matter, but Colorado has lost 5 of 6, and the wheels really seem to have fallen off the wagon for this team. And I know that in the Pac-12, if you go through a bad patch, usually you punch back. But of all the teams in the Pac-12 right now, Colorado is playing the worst. Alongside, I mean, not counting Oregon and Arizona State at the bottom. Like, of all the reasonably good teams in the Pac-12, Colorado with that 5 of 6 losing binge. I look at Oregon State's defense, which is, top of the line. And if Colorado wasn't able to figure this out the second time, I don't know how Colorado figures it out the third time. I don't know what the formula is for a Colorado team that's just gone steadily downward over the last 3 weeks. So I'm going to take Oregon State over Colorado in that
I
quarterfinal.
will say that wheels falling off the wagon when it comes to Colorado is a very funny pun that you didn't intend, but I appreciate it.
We try our best even when we don't know it. The next quarterfinal would be Washington State. We both have Washington State in our bracket, Ian. So Washington State against Stanford. And so, yeah, you alluded to this earlier. Washington State might need to beat Stanford to get in. If Washington State does beat Stanford, there is zero question that Washington State will go dancing. But obviously, if there's any doubt, can Washington State do that? And this is where I come back to, Tara Vanderveer's won 3 national championships. She's made double-digit Final Fours. She's done it all. She set the all-time wins record this season, passing Mike Krzyzewski. And of course, Gino Auriemma passed Krzyzewski like a few weeks later. So it's Tara and then it's Gino, the two winningest Division I basketball coaches, men or women, of all time. So Tara's done a lot of great coaching in her career. This season belongs in the upper reaches of anything she's ever done. Because as outlined earlier, she loses Lauren Betts, not just in general, but she loses Betts to UCLA, a rival. And yet Stanford is the clear class of the Pac-12, a loaded Pac-12, a rugged Pac-12. Didn't beat USC at home, but still won this very tough conference by 2 games. Cameron Brink, right there with Juju Watkins for Pac-12 Player of the Year. Now that could be a nice little debate.
Oh,
Is it Brink? Is it
that
Juju?
is interesting.
But like the two of them together have been far better than any other players in the Pac-12. I would include Alyssa Pealey scored just 5 points against Washington last weekend when the Utes lost at home. Brink and Juju have just set the bar so high. So Cameron Brink's not letting Washington State beat her in a Pac-12 quarterfinal.
I agree with you. And Tara, I don't know if this is an example of East Coast bias. I live in South Florida, so we hear about this from you guys on the West Coast a lot about East Coast bias versus West Coast bias. But she really should have much more national prominence than she has. And it's almost a disservice to not recognize that. I mean, so I think I agree with you that I think that Washington State has to win this game in order to make the tournament. I do think they need to go 2 for 2. And if they are able to do that, then they probably are in. But I don't think that they have much of a chance against what she's been able to elevate this team into is really impressive from a pure basketball standpoint. She has elevated this team to a level that they shouldn't be in. And I think that is apparent, but they're here. They're the number two team in the country. They're going to be a number one seed in the tournament. And it's really impressive to see what has happened there.
Absolutely. All right, let's move now to the big one, the one that USC fans are going to be focused on. So USC versus Washington or Arizona. So Ian, you have the Huskies. I have the Wildcats. Let's just briefly look at each matchup. I mean, I alluded to earlier that Washington hounded Juju Watkins on defense at the Galen Center. So Juju, if it is Washington against USC in the quarters, you know, Juju and Lindsey Gottlieb, they're going to need to have the game plan that can manage that Washington defense a lot better than what we saw a month ago. And then if it's Arizona, and you know, you said earlier, and I agree that Arizona is the matchup you that USC should want because and I think it's USC should want the matchup because these teams have played each other twice in the past 3 weeks. And last week was a double overtime game. So as you accurately noted, USC is going to know what's coming from the Arizona side, not so much from Washington. But let's just offer a brief scene setter for both of these matchups, USC Washington and USC Arizona.
Yeah, I think if it's Arizona, then the main question is just going to be, you know, is USC making their shots? Are they getting their shots and are they able to make them? I think that they've proven that they're superior scoring than Arizona is defensively. You bring up a very interesting point on Washington defensively. I would also add to the equation, Lauren Schwartz, who if she gets a hot hand, then USC's in trouble, right? So like there is a risk there. So that's really why I would prefer Arizona, because like you had mentioned previously, I just think I know what I'm getting with Arizona better, and USC can simp I don't want to make it so rudimentary, but USC can outscore Arizona. If Washington has a hot hand and has Schwartz really performing well, I don't know if they're able to counteract what the Huskies are going to be able to do defensively.
It's going to be fascinating either way. And again, the significance of that game is considerable on from all sides. Arizona or Washington, either one will have to beat USC most likely to get into the NCAA tournament. USC is playing for a potential number one seed in the NCAA tournament
And I
at
think
this
the
Pac-12
U I
event.
think I think the Trojans win that no matter what. I just would prefer to face Arizona than I would to face Washington.
I am right there with you. I do think USC wins in either case, and I'm going to talk about USC in a little bit as we when we discuss the semifinal game. But I just want to say now that I think the main reason USC wins its quarterfinal, no matter the opponent, is that Juju Watkins will have had 4 days rest, and she's so much better when she has extended rest compared to, and Trojans Wire readers have noted this during the season. When she has that short turnaround from the Friday night game to the Sunday afternoon game, it's usually that Sunday afternoon game when she struggles. So that Thursday game, USC's first in Las Vegas, Juju will be fresh. And I think that's going to make a huge difference in favor of USC. All right. So the last of the four quarterfinals on Thursday, March 7, Utah, UCLA. Utah won an overtime game in Salt Lake City earlier in the year when the Utes were on a better run of form. Late in the season, UCLA absolutely thrashed Utah, got up by like 30 points. It was a runaway. And so you had two very different games, home and away. And now this is the neutral court game. It would be the third meeting between the teams. So, Ian, which way do you think the pendulum's going to swing in this one? Is it going to be more like the game in Salt Lake City or more like the game we saw in Pauley Pavilion not that long ago?
If you are a fan of just basketball, this is the game to watch because this game is going to be insane. I think that this has the potential of being the game of the entire tournament. I love when Utah is on, they're on. When they're not, they're not. And UCLA, when they are, they're one of the best teams in the country. So this has really the potential to be one of the most exciting games of the entire tournament. And I'm really looking forward to, I really hope that this winds up being the matchup that we have. Ultimately, I think, again, I said this earlier, when in doubt, go with the team with more talent. So I'll go with UCLA, but I have zero confidence in that. I think that this could really wind up being one of those surprising games that winds up being a tremendous barn burner and one that we remember for a while.
You know, when we began this podcast, Ian, I was of the mindset that, you know what, UCLA probably handles Utah comfortably, but hearing you talk and just, you know, internalizing the point that, you know, Utah had a clunker against Washington on Saturday, could be that the Utes were just kind of mentally ready to move on to Las Vegas. You know, they didn't invest in that Washington game the way they could have. So you've kind of convinced me that this is going to be a much closer, more dramatic game than I was initially thinking. I am going to lean to UCLA because the Bruins have been better. You know, Betts was missing from their lineup in the middle
You're
of the
right.
season, and they took a dip. They seem to have gotten back in the saddle, and they look a lot more. Well, they aren't the team they were in January, but they're coming closer to that, I would say. So I will stick with UCLA in the bracket.
But
All right, so this.
Matt, hold on, hold on. Just 'cause Utah, if you remember in November and December, Utah was one of the best teams in the country. I mean, they were rocking teams. And I know that maybe they had a rough go about it. Now they're, I think they're the sixth seed. And so we might look a little bit down on it, but that's a credit to the Pac-12's ascendancy. It's not a knock on Utah. They're still a really good team. And so I am this that game is one of the ones that I'm really looking forward to.
It could be special, and hopefully it will be. All right. Now we move to the semis. So you have Colorado over Oregon State in the quarters. So that would put Colorado up against Stanford. I have Oregon State. So if it is Colorado and Stanford, you know, one thing that comes across is that, you know, these two teams, Colorado and Stanford, they were leading the pack a month ago. They were both above everyone else. And then Colorado had the 4-game losing streak, the 5 of 6, whereas Stanford was able to remain steady. So if it is Colorado, you know, Colorado would be coming off you know, what would be an exciting uplifting win over Oregon State. So if it is Colorado against Stanford in the semifinals, Colorado's going to have newfound confidence. And maybe Stanford thinks, well, we've kind of done everything we're supposed to do. We've proved everything we need to prove, and that, like, we're now focused on getting Tara back to the Final Four. Maybe Colorado enters with a motivational edge if it's playing Stanford. If it's Oregon State, I think Reagan Beers has to be on the floor. You know, I you know, Oregon State was able to push Stanford in Corvallis, but on a neutral floor. If Reagan Beers is not able to play and be effective, I don't see how the Beavers keep up with the Cardinals.
I completely agree, and I appreciate your setup, but that is still the lagging thing in women's college basketball is that there isn't the depth that is necessary to overcome these things. So I think regardless of who it is, Stanford advances simply because Stanford has figured out, not figured out, but Stanford has the depth to be able to withstand either team.
Now we come to the big one, and hopefully now I'm on record, Ian, as hoping this will happen. I know a lot of USC fans hate UCLA. They want UCLA to lose no matter what, but I want to have UCLA in against USC in the Friday night semifinal. It'd be the third game of the season, so it'd be the rubber match. They split the first two meetings, which, by the way, having those two games so early in the season was a joke. Like, why would you get those games out of the way early? Should have
Two
had at
years in a
least
row.
one.
2 years in a row.
Yes. You should have at least one USC UCLA women's game at the end of the season. The way North Carolina and Duke do it. That's the way you should do it. But of course, it's the Pac-12. It's George Kliavkoff. This is why the Pac-12 is a dying conference, because people just don't know how to do basic things. But anyway, I want this part three. I want this rubber match. And if we get it, Ian, it could be a situation where the winner gets a number one seed, the loser gets a two seed in the NCAA tournament. So that's pretty high stakes. You're playing for a no possible number one seed. And so if we get this matchup, Ian, to tee it up for our listeners here at Trojans Wired, I think a really key point, I mentioned that I like USC in the quarters against Washington, Arizona, because Juju Watkins will be fresh. Playing games on back-to-back days, that's going to be a real challenge for Juju, because she plays at 100 miles an hour. She plays full tilt, all out, both ends of the court. It's what makes her special. Like, she has that Mamba mentality, to use the Kobe Bryant reference. But of course, she spills the tank so much that when she has to play another game shortly after one game, that tank can run on empty, especially since she's a freshman and she hasn't built her fitness base as well as it will be built up when she's a junior, when she's a senior. That's why we see some of these ragged shooting performances from her. It's because she just emptied the tank of one night ago, 2 nights ago, and she's learning how to marshal her energies. So my point, Ian, is that USC is going to need to have to juggle some considerations in this Thursday quarterfinal, and then if it gets to Friday, that semifinal. USC is going to need the bench to steal some minutes for Juju Watkins so that she isn't overextended, both in the Thursday game and in the Friday game against UCLA. You're going to need to see Taylor Bigby. You're going to need to see Okunwofo, and Kayla Williams and the other players who, have at times made some really significant bench contributions. It hasn't been there every night, but it's been there a lot over the past month. That's going to be a really important ingredient in USC being able to get past not just Arizona or Washington, but then UCLA in the semis.
I understand your sentiment, and I agree with it to a certain extent, which is also, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the preference being Arizona and not Washington, because I think that that would be more of a burden on Juju if she has to face the Wildcats. That just the physical exertion would be greater just simply because of their defensive effort. But I also want to make a point that I think if it winds up being, and again, I go back to that Utah UCLA game being very exciting and enticing to me. But if it does wind up being, which I think we both agree, probably UCLA versus USC, I'm curious about how they're going to go defensively against Lauren Jo London Jones, because she wasn't a big part of the offense for UCLA earlier in the season. I mean, I think if I remember, she only had like 8, 10 points against them when they lost in the Galen Center. So she wasn't very active, and now she has emerged as this, sharpshooter out of nowhere, seemingly, that I think that is very dangerous for USC and their defense and the type of defense that they play. So I'm interested to see the chess match that possibly would happen with a USC UCLA part three. It's very intriguing. That being said, I think that USC is the better team than UCLA. UCLA is very talented, but I think on you know, any given day, let's say 6 times out of 10, USC wins the day. So I'm gonna go with the Trojans in that regard.
Yeah, I'm going to pick the Trojans, not because this is a USC podcast,
Yeah.
but because I do think that UCLA, after playing Utah and immediately turning around to play USC, you know that the Utah might take a little starch out of UCLA heading into the semis, but I also think that you know USC, and this is kind of the double-edged sword. USC has a very tough quarterfinal against Arizona or Washington. Both teams play great defense. I think if USC gets through that game facing such elite defense from either Arizona or Washington, UCLA's defense, which isn't bad, all right? Like UCLA is a really good two-way team. So I'm not saying that the Bruins defense is bad, but after playing Arizona or Washington, I think that USC is going to find UCLA's defense much more manageable by comparison. I think Juju Watkins is going to find that UCLA defense much more manageable. Let's keep in mind, Juju Watkins went to the free throw line 16 times against UCLA in that win over the Bruins back on January 14th in Galen. So, like, she knows how to get to the foul line against UCLA defense. And if she can, if USC is able to just get by that Arizona Washington landmine in the quarters, I think the USC offense is going to flow well enough to win that semifinal. All right. So the Pac-12 tournament, no games on Saturday. Everyone gets a deserved break. And then we have the final on Sunday. And by the way, that USC UCLA semifinal, if it happens, that's the last women's basketball, Pac-12 women's basketball game ever shown on Pac-12 Network, because the final on Sunday
Thankfully.
is on ESPN. So how about that? USC and UCLA close down the Pac-12 Network era of women's basketball if they meet in that Friday night semi. So then on ESPN on Sunday, you and I both have Stanford against USC, and well, what a storyline that would be. The Juju dropped. Staples knows how to crack the code for Tara and Stanford. Gottlieb's done a really good job against Stanford as USC's head coach. Even the game USC lost to Stanford a year ago in Maples, Stanford's offense did not function very well. So USC has been able to consistently defend Stanford, and that is certainly a reason to recommend USC. But I think that Cameron Brink, you know, I'm not sure about Stanford's motivation level in the semis against Colorado or Oregon State. But if Stanford gets to the final and it's USC on the other side, you know Cameron Brink is going to say, "Juju, not your time yet. You know, you're a freshman." This is my time. This is my send off. You're not gonna torch us again. I know that Cameron Brink doesn't defend Juju Watkins directly. Brink's a post player. Watkins is on the perimeter. But still, I do think that if we get to this game, I think Cameron Brink absolutely goes off, and I do think that Stanford does beat USC on Sunday.
You know, the I initially, when you were posing the question to me, I agreed with you, but as I'm thinking about it, I mean, Lindsey Gottlieb has been able to really plan for Cameron Brink throughout her entire career, probably better than any coach that I've seen, that she's really able to understand where Cameron Brink ticks and the weaknesses in her game and exploit them. So I don't know if I have as much confidence as you do. I would agree with you that I think Stanford probably is the favored team, and USC would find some difficulty. But I don't have the level of confidence. I think that the Trojans would have some chance simply because Juju Watkins has exceeded all expectations this year. I mean, she came in as the number one player in the country and somehow has exceeded all expectations. And in the year of Caitlin Clark, the fact that, we're talking about Iowa again and again, and to see how much one player has taken over for a team. I understand that Cameron Brink has that opportunity and that capability as well, but Juju does too. And so I will pick Stanford to win in a head-to-head, but I don't do it with much confidence. I do it with a lot of hesitancy.
Well, one thing we know is going to be fascinating, and I sure hope that we do get to see USC play at least, at the very least, UCLA in that Friday night semifinal. We at least need to get that from this Pac-12 women's tournament. And of course, at Trojans Wire, our website, we're going to be continuously covering this tournament and the USC women's basketball team. Climb aboard, folks. Juju Watkins in March Madness. You want to be around for that ride, so follow our coverage. And of course, next week with Ian Hest, we're going to review the Pac-12 women's tournament, give a little sneak peek to the NCAAs. But of course, Selection Sunday is still 2 weeks away, but we will be breaking down the brackets then. Ian, so great to have you back on the podcast. Thanks for helping us to preview the Pac-12 women's tournament at Trojans Wired.
I am always happy to talk with you, Matt. Thank you so much.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.